is the Day Zero update for August 13th, 2017. I'm Filippo Dinolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Reb Victoria.
And as we said last week, changes were coming to the show. We're going to be doing less topics, but hopefully we're going to dive more in depth into them. And we got some doozers this week.
Yeah,
the gaming industry certainly provided for us.
We chose a good week to switch formats. Yeah. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, no shortage of stuff to talk about, but some things aren't going to change. We still need to catch up on what we've been up to and what we've been playing, so we're going to continue to do that. And with that in mind, I'll start us off with a lot of the usual stuff and some old stuff coming back into the rotation. Defense Grid 2 is back. Yeah, I took a little break from it for a while, but now I'm... I noticed that I didn't have some of the trophies on the PS4, and it's like, I don't know why I don't have those. Let's get those now. So now I've got, I think, about 3 trophies left to get. One of them I'm going to have to coordinate with Chris, because it's a multiplayer-only trophy. So, yeah, I'm sure he'd probably want to get that one as well if he doesn't have it already. So there's that. I've been playing some Diablo 3. I've been playing some Street Fighter 5, and yeah, that's still good. Even though I keep getting my ass kicked now because I'm so rusty. So, yeah.
Then the whole Abigail thing.
Yes. And I actually didn't run into any Abigails in my online matches. Just strange because you'd think I'd see a lot of them, but nope, not in this case. And, of course, Tekken 7, which is still, consistently good.
Yep.
I really can't wait for Geese to show up and see how he ends up playing, because he looks like it'd be pretty fun.
Yeah. As well as the time-release characters as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Harada said at the start that any native Tekken characters are going to be free ads.
Just
so we're going to be
seeing
those periodically on top of the guest DLC.
Yeah. But he hasn't outlined plans for those yet?
Not really.
Yeah.
I can hope.
Yeah. Well, you might get Marduk back. You never know. So, one can hope anyway. But, yes. So, that's been it for me. How about you, Pat?
It's been my usual standbys. Final Fantasy 14, Tekken 7, Street Fighter 5 a little bit. Although I am starting to kind of move away from that game as I move further into Tekken. One that I have added to my rotation in the last week is, officially called Ease vs. Sora no Kisaki Alternative Saga. Henceforth, you will only hear me referring to it as Ease vs. Trails, because that's basically what it is. Basically, it's Power Stone by way of Guilty Gear with Falcom characters.
Okay.
And since I had a 3,000 yen PSN card burning a hole in my pocket, I went ahead and picked it up, and I am not disappointed. It's outstanding, really. I wish they would find a way to bring it over here, or at least do a sequel, because they've made enough games since then to add quite a bit to the roster.
Yeah, you're saying it's like kind of looks like Power Stone, but it's a little bit more involved than Power Stone, I would say.
Yeah, Power Stone by way of Guilty Gear.
Yeah.
There's
a whole lot going on in that game.
And they had all these really brilliant design choices, too, because you have mechanics that are really hard to imitate in a 3D brawler, like a forward dash or something. So what they did is they decided that the neutral state would automatically lock onto your target. So if you hit, say, the X button, which is evasion normally, you get a forward dash toward your opponent. This also works in the air, so it's almost like a chase button, if anything.
Yeah.
So we're getting into a little bit of Arcana Heart almost. But with the speed that this game plays at, you really need something like that. And then you have pretty good customization for what your loadout's going to be for your move set. You can equip 4 special moves that you execute by holding R and pressing one of the face buttons. And those everything that you do in that regard takes meter, so it's not a straight up. This isn't Smash or anything.
Yeah.
But they also give you the bang for your buck, and then you have assists, which usually make a statistical difference. I'm kind of disappointed that Charizard was relegated to the role of an assist rather than a roster character.
Hmm. Yeah.
But the list of assist characters is much higher than the list of roster characters. I have a pretty good idea of who I'm going to be maining when I unlock everybody, but I've got a long way to go because you only unlock one character per playthrough of the game's story mode.
Oof.
So, yeah, it's old school like that.
Yeah. So, and the story mode is how long?
Story mode, I've done a playthrough of it already. Mm-hmm. I'm about halfway through my second one with Otto.
Okay.
I finished Estelle a couple nights ago, unlocked Elk from Ease, and now I'm playing through as Otto, and I'm not sure who I'm going to unlock there.
Hmm.
Mm.
But, yeah, I'm having a blast with it. What sucks about it in its current form is that being a native PSP game, you do have to have one machine per player.
Yeah.
So if you want to get some multiplayer going, that's a lot of PlayStation TVs and setups.
Yeah.
But hopefully some kind of solution gets worked out, because this is a game that certainly deserves a lot more attention and a lot more say in the overall direction of the brawler genre, I would say. Hmm. And since Capcom hasn't yet called Power Stone off the bench, I mean, it would be a great substitute.
Yeah.
Mm.
It might even draw some players away from Smash.
Yes. Oh, it absolutely would.
Mm.
And for all the reasons that you imagine.
Mm.
So, I have finally found the brawler that is right for me.
Yeah.
Been streaming it a little bit. You know, you guys have looked in on it a little. I have a lot of fun with this game.
Yeah. It looks great. I mean,
like, I've almost resorted to breaking out the fight stick for it.
Yeah, it almost warrants it. I mean, are there like, you know, fighting game style moves that you have to pull off, or
no? Okay. But it's just more to do with the placement of the buttons than anything.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'll put it this way: your button layout is circle is your basic attack, triangle jumps, X dashes or evades depending on whether you're holding a direction or not, and square blocks.
Hmm.
So it's Smash Brothers, then.
It's a little bit of a problem when you're on a gamepad.
Yeah.
I
guess it doesn't have remapping.
It does have remapping, but I've yet to arrive at a layout that actually solves the gamepad issue.
Yeah.
Mm.
And there are still some things I could probably try, but or I could just unpack the TE2 and solve the problem that way.
Yeah, may as well. You got it.
Fantastic game overall. I really hope that Falcom revisits it sooner than later.
Yep. You hear that, Xseed? You might want to bring that one over. So,
I'm probably a little too late for this one being a PSP game.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, well. Well, there's always they could always port it to PC.
Yeah.
Like,
I would be totally on board with that, with online play and all. Oh, yeah.
Well,
yes.
Just gave him an idea. Oh.
Make it a thing.
Yep, make that happen. So how about you, Brandon?
Yeah, my primary, as has it been for the last couple of weeks, is Final Fantasy 14.
Welcome.
Yeah, and I think I'm just about... I'm pretty sure now I'm getting towards the tail end of A Realm Reborn.
What level are you?
I'm level 42.
Now you still got a ways to go.
Alrighty then.
You'll hit the level cap right around the time that it finishes.
Okay.
So, level 50 in that case.
Alright. Yeah, because...
And then you're going to spend a very long time at level 50 because you're going to be going through all the A Realm Reborn patch content.
Yeah.
They didn't lift the level cap until Heaven's Ward.
Oh, gotcha. Boy. Well, the good thing is level 50 is when the, you know, you can, you know, is when you can start getting prepared to become Red Mage, which is what my ultimate goal was. So I've basically gotten, you know, I've gotten 5 of the crystals from the primals. I got the 5th one last night. I've only got one more to go. And then I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to fight Bahamut at some point, aren't I?
It's optional.
Okay.
you get some optional raids called the Binding Coil of Bahamut.
Yeah.
Where they stick a whole bunch of side content that is Final Fantasy related, but not necessarily Final Fantasy 14 related.
Gotcha.
It's a great big side quest, and it's a lot of fun. They're like, trying to think how to put it. They're just a bunch of 8-player raids, I believe. That
sounds good. also, I'm just going to
progress in the main storyline without ever doing it.
Yeah. Also, I'm just going to make a sort of a guess here. LaCroix?
Louis Hua?
Yeah. He's still alive, isn't he?
Yes and no. Then again, it would not be altogether accurate to say that Bahamut is still quote-unquote alive.
Yeah. But, yeah, so, man...
Shit went down after the end of Eorzea video.
Mm-hmm. And, I gotta tell you, man, as far as plot-wise goes, it's probably the best plot I've ever had experienced in an MMO before.
I told you it was a proper numbered Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Complete with the awesome cast and great storytelling.
Yeah. And I have a feeling by the time Heaven's Ward comes around, they're just gonna jack it all up to 11.
Uh-huh.
Yep. But, yeah, that's pretty much all my gaming spend. What about you, Dan Reb?
Just be warned that they don't have any problem killing off awesome characters.
Oh, I know. It's Final Fantasy.
pretty weird week for me, actually. I was preparing myself to play the new Telltale Batman. So, like, every day after work, I try to leave myself 2 hours, but Telltale never sent me a code. So, that's that. Luckily, Alex was there to review it because he's all about the DC and Marvel stuff. So, good on him. The review is up. It's good. So, yeah, I can't wait to eventually get my hands on it, probably in Christmas when they lower the prices. So, yeah, that's that. My backup gaming in the meantime has been Overwatch. It's the summer games right now, so I've been playing a lot of Lucio Ball. And I didn't get a chance to play the event last year, so... it's pretty cool seeing as how Lucio can like jump like 10 times higher to block goal attempts and things like that. It's also really hard, so I don't know. I'm getting the same vibe I got from Rocket League, which is pretty much just a ripoff of it. So yeah, there's that. I've been meaning to play more Rockowin, but not so much, mainly because I normally play at late hours now, and my main Steam library is on my laptop PC, and I don't know. There's just something about playing games on my PC with a controller at night that just isn't all that comfortable. Probably because I'm playing in bed, and there's really no comfortable way to do that. So yeah, I'd like to give Rockwin more time, but at the same time, I don't know. It's just weird to turn on my other computer to do it.
Pick up a Steam Link. I think that'll be a perfect solution for that.
Yeah, my brother bought one, and I'm like, man, I should probably do the same thing. But I can also connect it to the HDMI. I don't expect that okay. much.
I mean, that works too.
That many frame issues from a game of that caliber, visually. And then I picked up Splatoon 2, and I opened it yesterday. So I'm going through the story mode in that. It's pretty much the same as the previous game. I haven't gotten a chance to jump online to go against people yet. But, yeah, I'll probably hit Christian up. The review for that game came out this week, too, and he also gave it a favorable score. So,
it's been solid. Game.
Yeah, totally. Like, the Switch has been having a marquee release every month, and that's probably the way Kimishima wants to keep it. So
that's what Nintendo needs to do.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I talked about it last week. ARMS sold a fucking million. That's ridiculous. So, but yeah, this is pretty much the calm before the storm when Sonic comes out. So
yeah, that's next week.
That will be a good day. That's quite a few days. Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's Tuesday. So yeah, looking forward to that. And I'm pretty sure more than me will be playing it come next week. So yeah, yeah, that.
So it's gonna be fun.
Yes.
All right. So yeah, pretty eventful week for most of us at any rate. So let's get into our discussion topics of the week, and we're gonna start off with Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. There's a situation here brewing, but we'll touch on that. Well, we'll get into that after, but we should at least point out that Ghost Rider was added to the roster. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that got completely overshadowed by everything else surrounding MVCI. That
justifiably.
So, yeah, Pat, go ahead and sum up what we're going through here.
An internal promotional video got leaked from Capcom that basically outlined their details regarding their esports strategy and fighting game community approach to Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. This was controversial because it involved pretty much extorting money from anyone who had it to extort, whether it was media outlets like YouTube or Twitch or even tournament organizers themselves. Non-CPT majors would have to give Capcom a cut of the proceeds in order to even be allowed to run Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, things like that. This has not gone over well, to say the least. And there are some other things that would be considered egregious if it had not been for the business side of things. They want to cut in on streamers. They want to basically do what Nintendo did on the YouTube side of things. Hopefully, the response from the community gets them to think better of it. But we'll see how far they take it.
Yeah.
One thing that would be very controversial, if not for the money aspect of it, the top 14 names on the in-game leaderboards would get automatic berths in Capcom Cup. What could possibly go wrong there?
Yeah, using online leaderboards to determine status, a system that can be gamed. I see no reason that could go badly.
I mean, it would be great to see some of those shit talkers get bodied on, like, on the biggest stage that Capcom can provide, but
yeah,
it doesn't really offer much to the legitimacy of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you end up with the worst case scenario where the top 14 are all cheats.
Well, then they'd get lit up by the people who actually deserve to be there.
Yeah. Still, it's
it would be gruesome and kind of glorious, but again, it would hurt Capcom Cup's credibility.
Yeah.
Considerably.
Yes. And Capcom is making a huge assumption that MVCI is even going to be successful at this point.
Yeah, the first step of the video assumes that MVCI lands and is automatically the centerpiece of the fighting game community, the number one played esports title, you know, whatever they want to describe it as. That's a huge assumption, especially if they were to take an honest look at how the game is currently seen in the fighting game community.
Response right now, well, based on the demo at the very least, has been mixed. Some people really love it. Some people think it's the spawn of Satan. And it's kind of divided right down the middle, too. There doesn't seem to be much in between here.
I'm one of the people who love it, but I will gladly withhold my purchase to put Capcom in their place.
Yeah.
Because 2-on-2 Marvel, that's the Marvel that I grew up playing.
Mm-hmm.
That's X-Men versus Street Fighter, Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter. That was how I came up playing these crossover fighters. But if we have to sort of make a gruesome example of this game and punish Capcom in order to keep the fighting game community in control of the tournament scene, I'll do it without hesitation.
Yeah, it's kind of a sad state. It's a very cynical outlook from Capcom, and, well, I guess I shouldn't be all that surprised given the crap they pulled with Street Fighter V early on.
Well, Street Fighter V is child's play compared to what we're seeing here.
Yeah, but still, I mean...
Fighter V was just a minor misstep compared to this.
Yeah, this is how to set your community on fire, basically, is what this is. I know...
And what they might not realize is that this isn't our first rodeo.
Yeah.
The fighting game community has a long tradition of revolting against those who would profiteer at our expense.
Hmm.
And it goes back all the way to an event called ECC4 back in 1999. Players arrived from all over the place. It wasn't a full national tournament because we didn't really have those yet. But it attracted a lot of players from a lot of places. And they arrived there, and they found out the venue wanted something like a 30% cut of the prize pot because there were entry fees and everything like that, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And the venue wanted a cut of that rather than maybe a courtesy house fee for letting us use the premises, which had been sort of a longstanding social contract of sorts. You run the tournaments, and we'll show up to support your venue to play casuals and whatnot. The players get there. The venue says they want 30% of the pot. The players go on strike in the parking lot and pretty much bring the entire event to its knees until the tournament venue just goes, okay, fine, we'll back off of it. And then the tournament went on as planned, but it definitely drew a line in the sand for any future such situations.
Yeah.
And it damn near caused a riot, to be honest. And so Capcom doesn't seem to realize that that's the community they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And if they're looking to strong arm all of these possible venues for profit, they're not going to like how it turns out for them, because the FGC will turn on them on a heartbeat.
Yeah, because, Capcom is not the only game in town here. If it comes down to running Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite and having to give Capcom a cut of, basically the proceeds, or...
They'll run Dragon Ball FighterZ instead and be just as fine.
Yeah. You know,
Capcom's already losing Marvel players to that game.
Yeah.
That's not speculation. That's not a projection. That's announced intent from actual players. They're going to go from Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 to Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah.
Those are players they've already lost. Now you got the people like me who actually like 2-on-2 Marvel, like the format, like what they're doing from a design standpoint with this game, but on general principle will not hand over control of the fighting game community or the tournament scene to a publisher.
Yeah. Or streaming, for that matter. I mean,
yep.
if you want a game to be a successful esport, you have to let people, play it online, stream it, get the word out.
Community.
Yeah, build that community. And if Capcom wants to shut that down and profit from it, a la Nintendo, they're going to find out just what Nintendo did, that people would rather just not do it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the response from Joey KR, Mr. Wizard, who runs Evo, didn't have a whole lot to say, but what he did say was pretty telling. For the most part, it was indigestion at the fact that they used Evo footage in their promotional video without permission, which carries with that the underlying threat of legal action. So this is already going to get ugly.
Yeah.
And when, Phil, when you and I were talking about this yesterday, I went to SRK, and the only front page mention of MVCI at all was just the Ghost Rider mention on the sidebar that he'd be playable at Gamescom.
Yeah, it's...
There was no hype, there was no news about the game, it was just...
Yeah, it's starting to look like the FGC is starting to blackball this game.
Yep. Mm.
And
you cannot have a successful fighting game if the fighting game community is not behind you.
Yeah.
And that is by design.
Yeah, and Capcom's community response to that hasn't been, well, great. It's been kind of a one-line terse response that says, yeah, the video that was apparently mistakenly uploaded wasn't final, so yeah, that's it.
That kind of smacks of the lead up to the 180, doesn't it?
That, yeah. I mean, you know, Microsoft learned from that, but, you know, it could be not final, and the one that is final ends up being worse. So, you know, there is that possibility
as well.
I don't
think they have the balls.
Well, with the current head of Capcom, I wouldn't entirely be too surprised, to be honest.
Takeuchi is kind of an ass.
Yeah, so if he wants... maybe he wants to retire early. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. So. I'll keep the Don Matrick stall open for him.
Yeah. But, yeah, this is a situation that is going to... Well, let's just be blunt about it. It's going to catch fire anytime now. Capcom really needs to make a response that isn't just one line. They need to really explain themselves.
They need to definitively disown the video.
Either disown it or, you know, well, yeah, they really do have to just disown that thing. I don't think you can explain it in any other way.
Nope. And until then, any developers out there that have had a possible Street Fighter killer in the works might want to move forward with it right now. SNK, maybe now would be a good time to start work on Garo 2.
Yeah,
Arika, grease the wheels on your game a bit.
Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball isn't really going to... Dragon Ball will dominate the same corner of the fighting game community that Marvel did, but it's not a centerpiece game. You have to have more of a standard, down-to-earth, neutral game-oriented fighting game to fill that role. So,
yeah,
Fighting Lair EX could do it. If they can get the... If fan revolt against Capcom reaches the point that it needs to, and if Arika really, really provides a deep tactical fighting game, then I could see that undermining Street Fighter V. SNK with Garo 2 would absolutely fit the bill. But Street Fighter is in a vulnerable point right now.
Yeah,
people have never hated Capcom more than they do right now, and so if you're gonna strike now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, SNK's got KOF 14, which is a very, very competent game. If they can put some money behind pushing that, you know, I think they could build that community. Yeah, it's definitely in the same realm, technically, as Street Fighter V, I would say. So,
Technically, it's in another dimension entirely because it has depth that Street Fighter V doesn't even dream of.
Yeah, but, you know.
That goes kind of back to what Daigo talked about in that interview. Mm-hmm. Forget who he talked to, but said there's just not enough meat on Street Fighter V's bones for players to adequately express themselves through their playstyle, and I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw a lot of that on display at Evo this year. There was basically the matches kind of ended up playing out the same way most of the time.
There were a bunch of character players, and then there was Tokido.
Yeah,
Tokido was the one person there who really put his own signature on his playstyle.
Yeah, but he'll do that.
And it's encouraging that he won.
Yeah,
but that's the exception and not the rule.
Yeah.
Whereas with King of Fighters, you can have 10 different types of one character show up at a tournament.
Yeah. Tekken, same thing. We saw that, you know, on display this year as well. So, you know.
We saw Jax in top 8.
Yeah, two of them.
How great was that?
Yeah.
And they were very distinct from each other.
We even saw Elisa be competitive. So, you know.
Well, Elisa's always in the mix, so that wasn't too surprising. But, yeah. Capcom has to get it together because, I went through, if you follow this show, I went through the entire Street Fighter V fiasco without, like, unfazed. I didn't think it was really going to hurt them. Now there's this video out there that basically shows how Capcom really sees the fighting game community. That's going to hurt them.
Yeah.
And it's going to hurt them until they disown that philosophy and anyone that it originated from.
Yeah. And instead, they've just been, you know, basically...
Radio silence.
Yeah, radio silence and basically DMCA takedowning any time that video gets re-uploaded.
Yep.
Because, yeah, apparently they really don't like that video.
If they were... if they were really not feeling that way, then they would just they would denounce the video rather than try to keep a lid on it.
Yeah. So, yeah, just how they've been responding is telling in and of itself. So, yeah, we'll keep following this one because I have a feeling the developments are going to be very, very intriguing over the next couple of weeks.
And look at the... look at the roster for Evo this year. It would not be hard at all to excise all of the Capcom from that and still plug in very worthy games to fill the same spots.
Yeah. You might not get the same numbers as you would with Street Fighter V as a major, but you'd get it definitely.
I don't think it'd hurt like a lot of people think it would.
No, I don't think it would. So, yeah.
I mean, you could bring KOF 14, KI. You could even do Melty Blood if you wanted. That's still popular.
Yeah, that. You know, Injustice 2. Like that was already there. So
yeah.
You know, could even bring MK back 10. MK10. I mean,
yeah.
There's no shortage of games that could fill that slot. So
this isn't. This isn't Evo 2002. We can live without Capcom now.
Yeah.
We can live without Street Fighter and without Versus.
Yeah. And that's what they're going to have to realize in the next coming days.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways. So moving on, we've got interesting news from Nintendo. They've announced that they're going to be bringing back the Nintendo World Championships. I think the last time
timing
they ran
much?
This... Yeah, they ran this a few years ago with, I think, 2015? Well,
yeah, that sounds right.
For E3. They're bringing it back. Mario Kart 8, 7. So, yeah, that's a weird one to be using, but okay. Is going to be the showcase game, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be others in there as well.
Yeah. The recent prevalence of the Nintendo World Championships kind of makes me wonder if this is a Kimishima initiative. They've been stepping up on the release calendar, and it would imply that there's going to be a steady influx of competitive style games to the Switch. So, kind of stay tuned on that one.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the past with the Nintendo World Championships, including the one 2 years ago and the ones like in the early 90s,
it's always for something.
It was always for something, and in regards to the competitive aspect, like it was the most random stuff. Get the most bananas in Donkey Kong, finish or speed run Super Metroid or The Legend of Zelda as fast as you can, things like that. So, it's really interesting that they decided to keep the format that they had 2 years ago, where you had to go to like 8 different Best Buy stores across the nation,
in
order to compete. They need to do more. But it is
quote-unquote world championships.
Yeah. it is an exciting time for like Nintendo fans and their general audience because in 2015, their E3 was probably lackluster. Like the most interesting part to me was the actual world championships because they actually made a few game announcements there. They announced Earthbound Beginnings. They showed that Blast Ball game, which was unfortunately part of Federation Force. And then that was where they had the big reveal for Super Mario Maker, which we all knew was going to be like just an interesting maker game. But seeing how it affected the community in various ways, granted the game is now like a huge fucking meme. But honestly, that's been Nintendo's marketing thing for a while now. Like they like being the popular thing. So I wouldn't be surprised to see various announcements being made. October is a weird time. The new Mario game comes out in October, right?
Yeah.
Yep. End of October.
This is coming along, to coincide with it.
Exactly. That's already pretty end game. So, they might randomly announce a multiplayer mode for it. This could be a big platform for Smash 4 Deluxe because, you know, the Smash is going to be involved in
Smash. It's going to happen.
That has to happen. I don't know what else it would be. Another Mario Maker. It's crazy.
If Nintendo goes ahead with the Wii U evacuation plan and Smash isn't on the boat, then everyone needs a Psyche Val.
Well, Sakurai would probably need the Psyche Val because that would imply that he'd be working on Smash 5.
Oh, shit. That poor bastard.
Yeah, because, I don't know, like, if they don't have Smash 4 Deluxe by now, then that would probably mean they're working on 5, and I would feel sorry for that man.
Yeah, it's way too early for Smash 5.
Exactly.
But I think this is part of something bigger, and it does come back to Smash. If you look at Nintendo's competitive presence, esports presence, it used to just be Smash. Now we have ARMS, Pokken Tournament. You could put Splatoon in that box. Just watch Nintendo slowly accumulate these not just competitive-natured games, but competitive-natured games that have that steady following, that have community-level events all over the place. This is an opportunity for Nintendo to make a move, and kind of like what I was talking about, Capcom trying to take control of the fighting game community, I can see Nintendo really making a move to try and dominate their own sphere. It's also going to be an opportunity for them to finally put a stake in the heart of Melee.
Yeah, that's due.
Yeah, if it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when Nintendo takes control of their own competitive circles. Melee is not going to be welcome in that club, and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
What the smoking gun that I would watch for is for Nintendo to strike a third-party deal, probably Power Stone 3 with Capcom. Kind of like how Street Fighter V was a deal with Sony.
Right.
So that Capcom's the publisher of the game, but for all intents and purposes, Nintendo owns it.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, just the thought of playing Power Stone, like, while standing in line with people just sounds utterly amazing.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you know about Nintendo is they don't like participating in things that they don't control.
Yeah,
they've already been at odds with the fighting game community over this with the whole Evo Smash streaming thing a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they only backed off of this because the relevance of their game was at stake. Watch for them to start up that practice again, especially if you see if you see Capcom starting to get aggressive with their community. Watch for Nintendo to kind of be emboldened by that and use that as a green light to try and wrangle control of the Smash community and everything that would come from that. As necessary as streaming has become, that's all it would take if they started enacting the same kind of policies on streaming their games competitively as they do with pretty much any Nintendo YouTube content. Game over, thank you for playing.
Yeah, well, it's basically an us to... Well, it's not going to go well for them. I don't think they can sustain that, to be honest. They want to think they can, but I don't. From what I've read about the YouTube initiative that they've had, they haven't had the pickup that they would have imagined.
See, the funny thing is, I think last year's or 2015's top 5 players were actually all known YouTubers. So it's like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it's like they really do want to control everything. They want to strong arm those that you know they're going to run the tournaments. But if that also means that they're going to be basically taking away some of people's income who just happen to be streaming that game and enjoying it and trying to get the word out about it, that doesn't breed goodwill.
No.
And it never will. So, yeah, they've got an uphill battle if they want to try to control that, and I don't think it's going to work for them.
I think they're going to get what they want, but they're not going to want what they get when they get what they want.
Yeah. That's
Because I think at the end of the day, Nintendo is going to control the landscape of competitive Nintendo games.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's what they're moving toward, and I think that's what they've got their heart set on. It's just a question of how much damage it does in the process.
Yeah, I mean, they may end up controlling the landscape of their, you know, competitive games, but the landscape may be a desolate wasteland by the, exactly. by the time they're done. So, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, at the very least, I think they want to have their influence over Smash rather than the Smash community or the tournament organizers, and yeah. that's gonna be where it begins.
Yeah. To circle back a bit to the topic of the Nintendo World Championships, I really do hope the winner ends up getting a gold Switch cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome.
Or a gold.
This is a callback
to the old ones, the yeah.
previous championships. Yeah.
Hmm. So, wouldn't be hard to do. Just saying.
Nope. You know, I also wouldn't put it past Nintendo to...
Go ahead.
I also wouldn't put it past Nintendo to use this as a way to bring out the GameCube Virtual Console and put Melee on that first.
Hmm.
Hmm.
That would be an interesting direction, but I really don't think Nintendo is fond of the Melee community. Yeah. I don't think they I think for the last basically since the reception of Brawl, I think Nintendo has wanted very badly to just cut Melee off, leave it in the past, and move on with the future of Smash Brothers. And Melee is just this thing to them that keeps hanging on and won't die off.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to do whatever it takes to make Smash 4 or when the time comes, Smash 5, the one and only supported Smash game.
Well, and they have to, because they can't make any money on Melee anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you look at how Melee works and what the players need from it, what they expect from tournament venues, tournament organizers, even just venues that host casual play. That's not something Nintendo can bring to the table.
Nope.
Like, even if they had GameCube Virtual Console on the Switch and put Melee on it, you're still not playing on a CRT, and that's going to be a deal breaker.
Yeah, for a lot of people.
Well, for pretty much the people that are really going to get behind Melee in some form.
Yeah.
So, it's really a situation where nobody can satisfy anybody else, and you know, I think Nintendo's going to make sure they come out on top.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's what I mean when I say Melee is going to die and Nintendo is going to kill it.
Yeah. So yeah. That's about all we got to say about that that one, I think. But yeah. So let's move on to I guess we've arrived. Sony's announced two Sen no Kiseki bundles for PS4. A 500 gig, which you shouldn't buy, and a 1 terabyte, which you should buy.
And you should buy because they're ultimately region free. So you have, if you are in the market for a standard model PS4, this one's gorgeous, and you know, it will play your North American games and sign into your North American account.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Sen no Kiseki 3 is Trails of Cold Steel 3 for the uninitiated. Yeah. I like to think that it would be a possible bundle for North America, but, you know, my heart says yes, my brain says hell no.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And if it came to North America, I might be fooled into buying one, so... Let's hope not.
Well, they're not even that pricey to import.
Mm-hmm.
You just get a Japanese copy of Trails of Cold Steel 3 that will probably be of no use to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless they happen to do multilang on that.
Well, then Exceed's translation would have to be done by then, and I don't see that being the case, being that it's due out next month.
If you don't have a PS4 and you're a JRPG player, yeah, by all means.
It's the one I would get. Yeah, absolutely.
But like, you know, if you're like us and you already have one, or in some cases two, I'd probably get a Pro.
Yeah. But let's talk about what this means for the current JRPG landscape, because a lot of people still don't know the Legend of Heroes franchise. Mm-hmm. Or even the Trails franchise. Final Fantasy has long been the sort of centerpiece franchise of JRPGs, and for good reasons. And it's still alive and successful, but it's not a JRPG anymore. That's a really well-kept secret to some. Now, as far as your traditional JRPGs, the ones that stick to that classical style, The Legend of Heroes has unquestionably jumped to the front of that genre. That's the second best kept secret, except to those who listen to this show. Mm. It's been especially prolific since they started the Trails arc, of which they're only about halfway through the original storyline as planned out by Kondo-san. It's got a good long run left to it. And anyone who plays it knows that it features the best of the genre, whether you like storyline, battle system, sound direction, whatever. This is JRPG gaming at its finest. Falcom in general seems really well positioned to be the Square Enix of the next 20 years if they play their cards right. Now, Square Enix, they're keeping one foot in the door with the continuation of the Dragon Quest series, and finally taking a global approach to the Dragon Quest franchise, as well as keeping Tokyo RPG Factory open and all these other contractors that they have working on various projects at the moment. That's encouraging, because hopefully it implies that even the Final Fantasy franchise might come home eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But even if it doesn't, the genre will be alive and well under Falcom's leadership. You've also got a big wave of talent coming in from the indie scene, whether it's people who got in because of RPG Maker on the PC, or whether it's Zeboid Games, who are really doing a good job of proving themselves. There's a lot of talent down there that that can step up and really find a prominent seat at the table. And so JRPGs are really coming to a place that they haven't been since, I would say, just after the turn of the century.
Yeah.
And that's really encouraging. So, and the fact that we're seeing Trails of Cold Steel 3, you know, when you're getting a special edition console made for your game, you're prominent.
Yeah.
You're out there in front. And so hopefully that momentum continues and we just see this level of prosperity continue for JRPGs, because we've got some really good games now these days.
Yeah. 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 And I would definitely advise any of our listeners to keep an eye on Falcom, because this is a company you will want to watch. They've got, you know, the Xanadu series that a lot of people haven't played. They've got, let's see, East 8, which is coming next month.
East 7 coming to PC the end of this month.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, they're poised to make a big splash. And
Sly 2 Plus is on the way.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good stuff coming from them. And a lot of it is going to make it over here. So.
And whatever you like, they make.
Yep.
If it's action RPGs, you've got the E-series. If you want action RPG brawler crossovers, you've got Ys versus Trails. You have to import that one, but the more attention we can get it, the better. Mm-hmm. If you like straightforward classical JRPGs with an outstanding narrative, I would say that Trails in the Sky has long surpassed Suikoden.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whatever you make, they like. Dungeon crawlers, you've got Brandish, you've got Xanadu.
I feel like a little bit more cutesy. You got Zoe the Ilbard Insurrection. That was pretty fun. E3 also.
Yeah.
I'm always just going to call it Zwei 2 Plus.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's really going to be interesting to see how a game like East 8 will fare. Granted, we've known about Falcom for years here at Smash Pad, but that game is probably going to be the first one that'll really like strike a chord with RPG players here in the States, mainly because, you know, it's going to be on the PS4. It's going to be a full-priced game. And it's not one of those other more obscure titles that seem to be localized for whatever reason. Yeah. So we'll see with that. And I'm hoping it does well. Nice America is doing all the marketing and translations. So, but from what I played, it was solid.
Hmm. Yeah, it's definitely one to keep an eye on. And you know, if you like JRPGs or if you just want to get into the genre, this is a really good time to do so.
Yeah,
there's never been a better time to do so, because there's just so many great titles to choose from.
Should I just come right out and say it? Falcom in 2017 is Square Enix 1997.
Hmm. You know, we really need to do a beginner's guide to JRPGs.
Oh, yes.
In 2017, I think that would be relevant.
Yep. I would count me in.
We'll do a show just for that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll totally do that. So, anyways. So, moving on.
But get us wrong. We aren't naysaying Final Fantasy in any way. I mean, you have Pat here playing FF14 for God knows when, which I'll never get into.
Which I will maintain is one of the top three numbered Final Fantasy games ever.
Mm-hmm.
I put 14 right up there with 6 and 9.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, a lot of us will shit on Final Fantasy 15, which I have to admit I actually played through and enjoyed. But does it feel like a classical Final Fantasy?
You didn't play it like you play a Final Fantasy game.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that just goes to show the evolution of the genre. But it's great to see the paradigm shift going back to where it was before, especially with Falcom. And, you know, if the JRPG genre is better when games like Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest are doing well. I'm looking at the numbers for Dragon Quest, was it 11? 11, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at those numbers as we speak, and I think...
it came out this week, didn't it?
Yeah, it's killing it.
Last week, actually. So it came out on both PS4 and 3DS, and 3DS only
Switch
sold...
Switch version is still pending.
Less. So... You know, it's here to stay, and I'm hoping Dragon Quest can find some heat here in the United States.
Yeah, and it's kind of remarkable that the those two games are selling as well as they are, because for all intents and purposes, they're both different games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, the PS, they were developed by two different teams. I'm guessing it's the same narrative between the two, but they play kind of differently. So, yeah, it's nice to. Hopefully they'll come out soon in the U.S.
Yeah.
I think Square Enix said they're bringing it over next year, so.
Hooray. Yeah, 2018, as expected. There's a lot to localize there. It's a Dragon Quest game.
Yep. And it's got PS4 Pro support, so there.
Oh, what's Dragon Quest going to do with a PS4 Pro?
higher res textures, mostly, but
it's Well, the thing with Dragon Quest is that it's a super stylized game,
mm-hmm.
and sort of that smooth minimalism that you get with the design is part of the identity of it. So I'm not sure if you can, for one thing, add detail to it that the standard PS4 couldn't do, or really... Well,
they're not so much adding detail as smoothing rough edges. Digital Foundry has a comparison between PS4 and PS4 Pro.
I'll be interested to see that.
Yeah, you can go over there and check out what they had to show. Because, the differences are subtle, but they're there. And they don't take away from the game. They just make it look better. As far as, the UI is native 4K. So if you got a 4K TV, you're going to have nice, crisp text and not have to worry about that. So everything else, the backdrops and... all the character models, they look a little bit more detailed in the PS4 Pro, but not so much that it kills the art style. They were very careful on their choices of upgrades. So give that a look.
Yeah. You should have a link there in the show notes.
I have a question for you guys. Given how successful both Persona 5 and Nier Automata were in sales, where do you think that puts ES8? Do you think...
I think it's terraformed it for ES8.
Are markets ready for it, or do you think it'll slightly plunge?
I think it's going to be ready. I think it's going to do well. I'm definitely thinking it's probably going to sell at least as much as Persona 5 did, if not more. Because, yeah.
Hmm. I wouldn't go that far. I would put the
arrival of ease in North America.
If it even came close to Persona 5, I'm like, okay, cool. Let's bring the entire Kiske series here.
It's going to happen. All right. So let's move on
I will say that if ES 8 does well, does that well, Exceed is never going to snooze on another Falcom game again.
No.
Nope.
Yeah, they'll be first in line to get localization rights because, I'm thinking they want to be on board with those.
Yeah.
So,
I have every confidence that that Niso will do right by ES 8.
Yeah.
But I still am not going to hide the fact that I was disappointed when it wasn't Exceed.
Yeah. Mm. So, I don't think the translation is going to be so bad that it's going to be a problem. So.
They seem to be going out of their way to keep to Exceed's terminology and everything. So that's comforting.
Yeah, I'm more concerned with being able to get a physical copy than, the quality of the translation.
Exactly.
So, keep an eye on that. So let's move on to Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, because that came out, I think, this week? Yeah, this week.
Been getting good reviews.
It got good reviews. And then something happened to Jim Sterling and the, review system as a whole, because
a
situation like this has never happened before.
A little bit before we get into that beef, I would consider myself a fan of Ninja Theory. I really enjoyed Heavenly Blade. I really enjoyed Enslaved. Not so much DMC, but it's been a company that I've followed for a while, but I knew nothing about this game until this happened.
Yeah.
Were they not marketing it at all?
It's kind of been kind of on the down low. They haven't really spent a lot of dollars marketing it. It's gotten some press at the various developer shows because it's gotten some views, and it's frankly gorgeous.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
But two weeks ago, I didn't even know what this was.
Yeah.
The whole game actually was made with a very relatively small team
a modest budget. And they're calling it indie AAA, which is a terrible name for what we kind of want.
AA, God damn it!
Yeah, just call it what it is. It's AA. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what we want to see more of on this show. The developers, taking on larger projects, but not to the point where they just get unwieldy.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good success.
It's sort of what we've always wanted. We used to talk about all the time in the older days, the sort of mid-tier sleeper hit type game.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one kind of flew under the radar up until there was a little issue with Jim Sterling's review, who... the story behind this is kind of strange and interesting. He ended up hitting a game-breaking bug that's so obscure that he may very well be the only one who's ever hit it.
Yeah, so basically what happened was there's a part in the game where you're having to go through this area where you have to stay within the light. If you get caught in the darkness, it's insta-kill, right?
Yeah.
And through this part of the game, you have to light these torches as sort of like... not necessarily save spots, but they're like...
they just keep you going. I mean, if you play Gears of War, remember the sections with the krill where you had to stay in the light and otherwise you died? That kind of idea.
But the problem is he forgot to light a certain torch before he died. And unfortunately, the game auto-saved after the point that you could actually get that torch. Basically,
so he was stuck.
And you have to understand, this was at a point it is literally impossible to go backwards without dying.
Yeah, can't go back. He can't go forward.
He's stuck. That's it.
Yeah.
And so what happened is he, because by all accounts, he was really loving the game up to that point.
Yeah.
And then he's like, that happens. He just kind of threw his controller down. He said, screw it, 1 out of 10.
Lost his shit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And then he did something which he has never done before. He went back, took that old video review down, put up another one, and basically said, this wasn't really my finest moment in my career. I kind of acted rashly. Game is actually really good and you should try it. Don't take anything unduly negative from my unfortunate mistake that I made.
So that just makes me think more highly of him.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, he owned up to it. He made it right.
Yeah, I mean, he was working with Metacritic to, like, well, okay, this, so they marked his initial review as a work in progress so that, you know, the score wouldn't be negatively affected.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once he got the new video done and uploaded, and then that score changed from a 1 to a 7.
Yeah.
And he basically gave it 1 point for every hour of enjoyment he got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That's kind of the story in a nutshell. And it's, you know, how do you handle a situation like this? First of all, don't rage review. Just don't do that.
It is somewhat comforting to me that it finally happened and that it was someone as prevalent as Jim Sterling that did.
Yeah.
Because it justifies a lot of impulses that I've had, that I've put a lid on over the years, but have still really, really wanted to do. There's something sort of therapeutic about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm just glad that I'm not the only one who has had that experience, apparently.
Yeah.
But, and for Sterling's part, he made it right.
You know.
He went back, owned up to it, did a re-review, and gathered himself.
Yeah.
as you need to do in that situation. But,
But if you're Ninja Theory, what do you do?
How do you actually test?
For one thing, I'm a lot more careful where I flag for autosaves.
Yeah. Because
I would not be surprised if Jim got a message from Ninja Theory themselves.
Yeah, they probably said, send us that save file because we've never seen that before.
Yeah.
I mean, they could easily just modify the save file for him to basically just have his torch lit so that he can continue. But, you know, for most people, they're not going to be able to do that.
That's a lot of code.
Another possibility would be to have autosaves be cumulative rather than one that just keeps overriding itself.
Yeah, well, the overriding save is kind of part of the gameplay mechanic. In that, everything you do is cumulative. If you die, there's that, you know, corruption mechanic that starts to go up your body and eventually will get to your brain. Initially, people had thought that meant it's going to delete your save. I think they probably should have done that. That probably would have been cooler, but no, don't really have to worry about that. It's just it's just a way to mess with your head.
So basically, they're pulling some Eternal Darkness shit.
Yep.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah. Basically, very pulling some very mind fucky things.
From what I've been told, Hellblade is basically like a Eternal Darkness hallucination sequence. The game.
Yeah, it's like not just one scene; it's the entire game. And they actually recommend that you play the game with headphones. Because, like, the initial, like, you're always hearing voices, and then they're, like, panning around your soundscape. It's really creepy and really effective. I think Ninja Theory has done a phenomenal job with this game. It's probably should be on a Game of the Year list, you know, once more of us have a chance to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So. Did any of you pick it up?
Chris did. I haven't had a chance yet. Yeah.
Once I get the...
had I known about it, I would have.
Yeah, it's $40.
I'll definitely be getting it.
Yep.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm one of those guys who thinks that if your game's going to have autosave, we should be able to go back to any save there was there. So whether it be a recording or whether it be a rewind, that's something the game would really stand to benefit from.
Yeah, you should keep at least two saves.
Yeah.
You know, go be able to go at least back one more save. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if one gets overwritten, you know, that's fine. You can still go back. Because chances are you're gonna find the issue before that other save gets overwritten, because you wouldn't be able to get to anywhere. So, mm-hmm. So there's that.
But yeah, I mean, my overall thoughts mirror Pat's. You know, there's been a lot of times that we've gone crazy, but we've been able to put a lid on it. This is actually one of the main reasons why, you know, in our decade or so of covering games, like, this is why I like working with a staff. Because, you know, our staff is able to, well, not really put a lid on you, but at least find a reason to do what it is that you do or we do. Like when Street Fighter V came out, you know, I was getting on Pat for not having the review out at a certain time. But yeah, he told me it wasn't finished. But I'm like, it's been 6 months. Why isn't it finished? It has to be finished. Things like that. But you know, that
I wanted to give it a review that would reflect the game for the long term. Mm-hmm. And if I just went ahead and said, this is how it is in February of 2016 or whatever, and this is the label that I'm going to stick on it for all time, it would not adequately reflect what the game is today.
Yeah, totally.
And understand. I think that having held off and waited for everything to come together, I think I was able to give it a review that more accurately stands up.
Yeah.
And so if someone's out there maybe listening to this podcast and still hasn't bought Street Fighter V, and is, first of all, they've heard the first half of this show, and they're probably wondering what the hell's wrong with Capcom. But at the same time, if Street Fighter V is just something that they're curious about and sounds like something that they might want to play for what it is, they could go back and read my review, and that and everything that I said there is still indicative of what the game is.
All relevant.
Yep.
Yeah. The main thing is that what I like about what Jim did is that he owned up to everything. And I don't know if you read the comments, they're like, oh yeah, so you're basically just saying, you know, you have no more say as a reviewer. I'm like, how does that mean that? I mean, you know, he owned up to everything, and not only that, he was able to defend everything he said adequately, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically all you want to do when you want to provide an opinion, whether it's controversial, whether it's something that everyone's going to agree with. If there's logical reasoning behind it, why argue it?
Yeah.
So
and there's a chance, albeit remote, that is the experience you're going to have with this game.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would have done differently, especially if I'm going to receive a code from the developer, I'd let them know. And like honestly, if it means putting out the review out later, just do it. Everyone does that now. So
yeah, just cares. don't rage review. Just don't do that.
Look, Jim Sterling is a divisive figure in the industry, and he's tough, but he is fair.
Yeah,
and you know he realized he screwed up, so he. Took it back.
Yeah.
I mean, and like you said, like for someone like him, it was unprecedented. So, again, I respect him for it.
Yeah. I mean, he likes to put on that persona that he's never wrong and anything he says is like gospel from the gods, but he's a human being and he knows when he makes a mistake, you know?
Yeah.
So he probably wishes he could go back and not have done that video and to begin with, but
I don't care for it, but I respect him. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so so good up on that. Anyways, so we got. I think we've talked about the Toshihiro and Nagoshi mystery project that's been rumored to be in the works.
Yeah, it's going to be announced on the 26th.
Yeah,
We don't know yet if it has anything to do with the Switch game that he announced at the Switch reveal, you know, months ago, or if it's going to be something else. He is also the centerpiece of this whole Amazing Sega initiative. He was the developer that was highlighted in the video that Sega produced promoting this initiative and their quote-unquote Road to 2020. I think all these things kind of add up.
Yeah. Well, he's got a wide body of work that kind of encompasses most of Sega's life as a arcade and console developer. He's been in the business for a long time. His credits are numerous, and they're... Well, yeah, he worked on Virtual Racing. That's going way back, and
a
bunch of other games as well. Some of them more successful than others, but I think he's most known for his work on Yakuza.
Yeah, I mean that's really the franchise that he put his stamp on, and just pretty much defines his career by. But he also helped do Shenmue, which probably explains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He was involved with Virtua Racing, Planet Harriers. When Nintendo licensed the F-Zero franchise to Sega, he was the one who worked on both the arcade and console versions of that.
Mm.
So, yeah, he was involved with Super Monkey Ball, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it.
He's definitely deeply involved with pretty much all of Sega's identity for the last... 25 years.
Yep.
So, as far as what he could be working on now, it's really anybody's guess, but I'm starting to suspect that he's going to be taking the reins of the Shenmue remakes, and that this title, that's going to be what's announced on the 26th. And that it's not going to be the Switch game. The Switch game, I think, is going to be F-Zero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to go back to the Nagoshi well, because it's a good well. And since Miyamoto doesn't want to do F-Zero right now, let Nagoshi do it.
Yeah.
Because the last time he did F-Zero, it was pretty fucking good.
Hold my beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So... Of course, it could be the Shenmue remakes, as you say. But there are also other possibilities.
Oh, yeah, and I would not put a monkey ball past him, especially with the ergonomic controller.
Yeah, so, you know, monkey ball could be a possibility. You know, a potential revival of some older Sega properties are also possibilities, because while he may not have been directly involved in the original properties, he did do some that were similar. So
he has very deep roots in AM2, and that cannot be understated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did he work on Otogi?
I don't think so.
Fuck. Nah. Okay.
Yeah. But let's see here. He did Binary Domain, so that's. I don't think that's going to be a possibility.
No. That's not exactly an iconic Sega title.
No. like I told you the other day when we were talking about this offline, he would be more than capable of modernizing Streets of Rage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love a Nagoshi-produced Streets of Rage 4. That would be a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I know that Spikeout is on his credit list, and that was unfortunate. But Yakuza is also on that, and the combat in that is much better. So
now here's one that we didn't talk about. Who at Sega right now would be better suited to resurrect Virtua Fighter than Toshihiro Nagoshi?
Yeah. I mean,
and he's already featuring Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown in Yakuza 6. So there's your connection.
Yeah. That's, one I hadn't connected those dots. That's very.
So if he's kind of secretly, internally evangelizing the Virtua Fighter franchise by embedding it in Yakuza 6 and seeing how it's received, you know, on 8th generation platforms, it's not hard to take that next step.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure like everybody would want Suzuki to be working on a new Virtua Fighter, but he's a little busy right now. So yeah, Nagoshi would probably be just as qualified to do it. So yeah. I mean, he's done Burning Rival, which basically worked off that engine. So he's got experience there.
Yeah.
So the 26th, we will know for sure what it is, and whatever it turns out to be, I think it's going to be big. I mean, the Shenmue remakes themselves, if they're going to be done right, they're probably going to be modernizing both of those games.
Yeah. Well, they have to.
You bring those up to speed with the Yakuza controls and all that stuff. You got a couple of very good games in the making there.
Yeah, I hope Suzuki has Nagoshi has Yu Suzuki's ear when it comes to the battle design on Shenmue 3.
Yeah.
Because quote unquote Virtua Fighter RPG did not really work that well, let's be honest.
Nope.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Plus, you know, Yakuza exists now and it didn't then. So
Nagoshi took that concept, turned it into a straightforward 3D beat 'em up, and it worked beautifully.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, look forward to that on the 26th. So, let's get into
whatever
the shrapnel.
It is, it's going to be huge.
Yep, it will be. So, let's get into the shrapnel. These are stories that we kind of want to touch on. I'm actually going to cut that last one because it's really kind of irrelevant at this point. But I will talk about Atari and Jeff Minter getting back together for Tempest 4000.
Have they announced platforms for this yet?
Oh, I'd imagine it'd probably be on PS4, but I don't think I saw any platforms being announced yet.
Well, the last time that these guys were together doing a Tempest game, it ended up being a Nuon exclusive.
Yeah.
So you have to wonder. And what with all this talk of an Atari box of late, not only could I see them making Tempest 4000 an exclusive to it, but that would get me to buy.
Yeah, that's a good point. it would be nice if we knew more about the Atari box itself. But yeah, would you really announce a Tempest 4000 now and not put it on any of the prominent platforms?
Would you announce Tempest 3000 when they did and not put it on PS2?
Well, didn't they eventually bring it to PS2?
No.
No, they didn't.
Tempest 3000 lived and died as a Nuon exclusive.
Hmm. Oh, that's unfortunate. Yeah. Well, I see this going one way. Either Tempest 4000 becomes a new one. I've got a new one on my head now. Atari box exclusive, and the Atari box does really well, or it doesn't, and then the game gets ported to the relevant consoles.
Yeah.
So, either way, I think we end up getting it on the PS4, Xbox One, PC. But this is going to be a very fun one to watch. Because, Jeff Minter just did Polybius on a PSVR, which, as far as I'm concerned, is weaponized VR.
That's,
VR got weaponized long ago. Someone did that first-person Sonic the Hedgehog concept.
Oh, my God.
It'd make you want to hurl.
The nice thing about Polybius is that it's not VR exclusive, so you can play it on a regular PS4 if you want.
Yep. Yeah, you can play that on a PS4. And you can play Resident Infinite on a PC now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, yeah, that came over, and you can get it on the Oculus or HTC Vive if you want to play it on VR there. And if not, you can just play it standard 2D. So that's all good.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think we're going to call it a show, guys. This is our first show with the new format, and I think for the most part it went pretty well.
Yeah.
It went a little short compared to what we're used to, but I think that's because Lee wasn't here. And I think he's going to hear this episode and wish he was.
Yeah. Still, there was a good bit of content here, a good bit of discussion and analysis.
We
talked about Sterling's review. Imagine if Lee reviewed Zelda. Oh, my God.
Oh, God. He'd be here, like, for 4 hours. You know, Nintendo really sucks. So, I'd just like to remind you guys to check out smashpad.com. We got a lot of content going up there in the next couple of weeks. We've got reviews for Well, yeah, the Batman that just went up. We have Splatoon 2 that just went up, and we've got more stuff to come. So check
we'll
that out.
We'll have Sonic to come, sure.
Oh, we yeah, Sonic will be there. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, crap. I can't remember what else we got going on. Just, we got a lot of stuff coming. Just keep an eye on the site, and you'll
see it. Watch the site. It'll be worth it.
Our subscription links, you can check us out on iTunes, Google Play, or TuneIn, or your favorite RSS reader. Links are down at the bottom of the show notes, but you can find us on any podcast aggregator. So with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And we'll see you all next week.